Andrew Sharp joins us, NBA writer for Sports Illustrated. I don't know who tweeted this. I think it was actually a writer in San Antonio, but I saw it. And we were talking about NBA MVP races. And the question was, if you viewed this like you would a college or a university exam, and 50% of your grade was offense and 50% of your grade was defense, boy, it would be hard to shut out Kawhi Leonard from the MVP conversation if that was the case. Is that how we should be looking at this?
So it's tricky. I mean, I actually, for the last month or so, have been all aboard the Kawhi MVP bandwagon. But I don't agree with that reasoning, the 50% defense, 50% offense, because honestly, for teams all over the league, it's much harder to find great offense and someone who can carry you night after night after night. And that's been the most impressive thing with Kawhi this year, is he's been that guy for the Spurs. It's not just that he's some two-way player who does a little bit of everything. He's been like a legit top five superstar who's, I think he's had 30 points in like five of the last seven games or something. And I mean, he, like, on Saturday night, he came into the fourth quarter with 14 points and he finished with 34 in a win over the Wolves. Like, he's been unreal on a pretty consistent basis. So it's not even about the defense for me. It's just he's the best player on what could end up being the best team.
It's so, and this is not fair to him, but this is how we view it. We just have so much respect for Pop in San Antonio, and there they are, 48-13, and their second best player is LaMarcus Aldridge, and it doesn't faze us. And so we're so conditioned to think, yeah, but, you know, you take Kawhi Leonard off this team, and they're probably still above 500 making the playoffs because that's what they do. And we're never going to learn the true answer to that unless Kawhi misses a bunch of time.
Yeah, no, and that's totally true. That's definitely been sort of the response from people when you start talking about Kawhi. But I don't know. I mean, the rest of this team, everybody's kind of old and creaky, and like LaMarcus Aldridge is good, but he's even lost a step over the last year or so. And the thing that's impressed me most is, if you go back to last year's playoffs against the Thunder, Kawhi was kind of shut down a little bit by Durant and just couldn't really create on his own. And you watch the Spurs now, and there are times when you're it's like watching like a superstar from the 90s. They just sort of ISO Kawhi, and he has crazy footwork and gets an open shot for himself. And that's not a system. I mean, he sort of does that on his own. So that development in his game caught me completely off guard. So I'm in on him.
Yeah, I will say that for all of it's not all of its faults. You know, not everything is perfect about the NBA. It's probably a little too top heavy. We're still going to see most likely the Cleveland Golden State NBA Finals is less automatic now than it was a month ago, yeah. I suppose. But I will say it probably has the best MVP race, because you can always make a case for LeBron. You can make a case for Isaiah Thomas. You can't really make a case for Curry or Durant because they're just splitting votes there. But you have Kawhi. You know, would it shock anybody if James Harden won it? And I like, listen, if Russell Westbrook does this triple double thing, I can't not vote for him. Like, you know, first in 33 years, it's the best MVP race in any sport. I really think that.
Yeah, you know, and it's fun because last year Curry was so good that it almost like the drama was over by like January, because you just had to vote for Steph. But now it really does. It depends on what you value, and it's sort of. It will be a very interesting debate over the next like 6 weeks or so.
Andrew Sharp joins us, NBA writer for SI. Sometimes you make a trade at the deadline, and it is just such an amazing, perfect fit that it can turn around your season a little bit. We're seeing that in Washington a little bit with Bogdanovich, and I mean, they needed a bench. He comes in, he's lighting it on fire. 8 more three-pointers last night. He's been great against the Raptors, even though the Raptors went into Washington and beat the Wizards. That's something that not a lot of teams have done lately. Can just a small addition like this be enough to you know, swing playoff positioning in a conference?
You know, I think it will be. It'll be a big factor for Washington, because I think if you took an honest look at what the Wizards had 2 weeks ago, they had about six players, and it was sustainable through like February. But if you extend the season out two or three more months, the team would have really worn down, and things would have gotten pretty thin by the time the games really started to matter in like mid-May. And now I think they have a few more options off the bench because they added Brandon Jennings too, and now Kelly Oubre won't have to play quite as many minutes, and so they're basically going to be able to spread around the playing time a little bit more. So a team like that, it really does make a difference. And you know, the Raptors are another one with you add in Ibaka there, and suddenly like the whole rotation just looks a little bit healthier because now they can go small, and it makes more sense. And Ibaka and PJ Tucker will definitely be factors.
What are our expectations now with no Kyle Lowry? Because we've seen both sides. We saw this team with no Lowry come out, beat Boston, pick up a couple of wins over, you know, lesser than opponents, including the New York Knicks, but whatever, they did it. Then they got blown up by Washington. Then they won in Washington. Then they lost a tough one in Milwaukee. I mean, they are vulnerable. There's no doubt about it. They're missing their heart and soul, their best player. They need DeMar DeRozan to be great every night. In terms of positioning, like what is the expectation now for the Raptors?
So I think if you're in Toronto, the expectation has to be just you'd be happy with the four seed, and anything else is sort of like a wild bonus. However, I will say that like having seen them in both those games, I was at the game in D.C. and it's a really solid team even without Lowry. I mean, DeRozan is really tough in the half court, especially at the end of close games. He just can sort of create buckets out of nowhere. And Norm Powell, I think one of the hard parts is that Norm Powell's one game he will look great, and then another game he just sort of doesn't quite show up or doesn't quite click with the rest of the roster, and that's going to be tough for them because they need an extra contributor in the backcourt. But I'll tell you this much: like when I heard Lowry was out, I was like, all right, so the Raptors are going to be a fifth seed, and they'll slide in. And then if he can come back for the playoffs, they'll be in good shape.
Right. Your first thought.
Yeah, exactly. And they've already sort of surpassed my expectations in terms of what they can do without Lowry. And you know, they own the tiebreaker with the Wizards, and the Wizards are going on the road to the West twice in the next 3 weeks, and they've got a bunch of games in March. So they're going to have to like hang in there to stave off the Raptors, and the Raptors are good enough to put pressure on them.
It's such a big stretch for the Raptors because, you know, when you are a very good regular season team, a fan base says, okay, well, talk to me in playoffs. Let's see what they do in playoffs. But this next, you know, 15 games, 20 games for the Raptors is so big because there's such a difference between that third seed and the fourth or the fifth for them. You know, like you had just said, if you get that third seed and you're only a game back of the Wizards, are the Wizards in better shape right now? Yeah, maybe. But if you can make up one game, that's all you have to make up. Like all of a sudden, you know, you're in the 3-6 matchup. You're getting most likely the Celtics in round two, who you play well against anyway. It's just we can say all we want. Yeah, talk to me come playoff time, but you got to put yourself in the best position come playoff time.
Oh, 100%. It's interesting because it is. I mean, first of all, I already said the expectation should be the fourth seed, but sitting here in D.C., having watched this Wizards team all year, and I mean, the Wizards are trying to sort of adjust rotations on the fly, and it hasn't been seamless, so there's going to be some sort of growing pains over the next month or so. I would probably predict that the Raptors end up catching the Wizards and land in that third seed, but you're right. Like, big picture, if they can make it to the third seed, I would pick Toronto in a series against the Celtics
if Lowry's back, yeah.
And then you're talking about getting back to the conference finals. You're one step away, one injury away, and it makes sense to bring this team back. But if they get the fifth seed or the fourth seed and have to play Cleveland in the second round and get blown out again in five or six games or something, yep, and it's not that close, then suddenly it's time to pay everybody this summer, and it's harder to justify. So it doesn't really make sense that there's that much drama between the fourth and the third seed. But like, I think if you play it out, the timelines are pretty different in terms of the way the team is perceived.
Yeah, I would agree with this. I mean, we do this game all the time. And, you know, and if I say, okay, here's a contract, I'm going to give it, you know, to the fan base right now. Do you sign it if I say Raptors get the fourth seed? And I think most don't, because that just eventually means a second round matchup with Cleveland, and it's not a death knell, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, well, and again, I mean, that's the other thing with the Lowry injury is we haven't gotten to see how good this team can be when everybody's healthy.
Correct. Yeah,
and that's, I mean, like, if anything,
and we might not. There's no guarantee that Lowry just comes back and he's All-Star Kyle Lowry in game one of the playoffs.
Oh yeah, and that's what's scary. But the way I've looked at it is that Lowry was playing so many minutes night after night that if he can come back healthy, this little 6-week sort of interlude in his season could end up being a blessing, where he'll be more rested than he would have been. And look, I mean, if you put healthy Lowry in that lineup, it's a really scary group, because I watched them on Friday night. When they go small, it's tough to keep up with them.
Andrew Sharp joins us on the Andrew Walker Show, NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So DeMarcus Cousins gets a win last night for the first time since this big trade. It's so tricky because, boy, you see those twin towers, if you will. There's Anthony Davis. There's DeMarcus Cousins, and last night finally was you know, the first win they get. I don't know if they gave up a ton to get him. And at the same time, I wonder, in New Orleans, if you're a fan, you're wondering, will this really, you know, work long term? Or is it just, we have a couple of pretty things now?
Yeah, you know, and it's almost like last night's win should count as like half a win, because it was against the Lakers. And, you know, the Lakers have been sliding hardcore for the last 3 months. And if I'm a Pelicans fan, I understand why they make the deal, because they had to try something. They didn't have any better options, but I definitely would wait a little while before I get too excited about what they actually have there, because the rest of the roster is so thin, and they're going to have to try to come up with money to build out the rest of the roster while also bringing back Drew Holiday this summer. It's going to be tough. And like, I think when they made that deal, everyone around the league was like, wow, we can't wait to see Boogie and Anthony Davis against the Warriors in the first round. And here we are 10 days later or something. And I think just about anyone who's seen them play can say pretty certainly that it's not going to happen this year.
Like, yeah,
they're going to need more time. And that makes sense. That's not an indictment against Boogie or anybody else. It's just hard to figure out how to make that work in the span of like 25 games.
They're three back. I mean, right now Denver's in that eighth seed. Denver can put up shots and points with the best of them. Is there anybody, who does Golden State not want to face in that eighth seed? You got Denver, Portland, Dallas, Sacramento, Minnesota, and the Pelicans, I guess, are all in the conversation.
I mean, I think the Pelicans are the only team that would really be tough on them, because, you know, Denver can score, but Denver really can't play defense. And Minnesota is a team that could be a little scary for Golden State. But the problem with Minnesota is they can't close games.
That's a sweep. Minnesota's a sweep if that happens.
Right.
If New Orleans, I will say this, if New Orleans gets to the eighth seed, they're 3.5 back, it's unlikely. But it means two things: that they figured something out and they're going in hot, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That would be the matchup.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is this, if New Orleans gets rolling at the very end, then you're like, whoa, okay. Because it's also like, it's a Warriors team that may not have Kevin Durant. And, you know, you could definitely see New Orleans just beating up the guys inside, whether it's Zaza, whether it's like Draymond is great as a five in sort of periodic stretches. He's not designed to bang with Boogie and Anthony Davis for the entire game. So So that's a challenge, but I don't see it coming together for New Orleans.
Good stuff. Hey, thanks. So we always enjoy catching up. I, for one, we got to ask you because we're soliciting opinion on this. I know you are well invested, well abreast of the Arian Foster versus the Wolf conversation. I'm 50-50 on it. I do know that Arian Foster is going to look worse for wear, even if he comes out of that matchup. JD thinks that it's just no contest. Where do you come in, Arian Foster versus a Wolf?
You know, I wanted to believe in Arian Foster last night. I wanted to be all in on humanity and our chances because, the human mind, and Arian Foster brought up the opposable thumbs. I felt like we had a lot going for us. But I've also, this is the only thing I care about today, on Monday, and I've done a lot of reading, and I really think that the force of the Wolf's bite would be a real issue, because I think you could just go into shock, and then suddenly it doesn't matter that you've got opposable thumbs.
You think the Wolf cares about opposable thumbs at this point? Not really.
Yeah, I think the Wolf has some intangibles that would make it pretty scary in the wild, so I'm gonna have to go with the Wolf here.
I saw this tweet. I'm not convinced that Arian Foster beats a German Shepherd. It's a Wolf. It's a trained killer.
Yeah, exactly. They are conditioned to kill, and their bones are harder to break. And then the fangs would be an issue. I just think that there would be too much to overcome.
Yeah,
I want to believe in Arian Foster. I respect his spirit, but I don't think it would end well.
Yeah, I would agree. The analytics say Wolf. There's no doubt about it.